Well, welcome back to Speak Up Las Cruces. And Daisy Maldonado and myself, Peter Goodman, have been joined by City Councilor Johanna Bencomo. But we're going to talk. I do have some questions about the city that we'll get to later.
Okay.
Want to talk to you about your day job with New Mexico Safety Over Profits. Did I get that right?
Yes, Safety Over Profit.
And over profit, singular. And I'll let Daisy mostly take the lead, but tell folks what that is. And,
yeah. You know. Thank you so much for having me on about this. I know that this is the hot topic of the session, if you will. And so I am very happy to come here and speak with you all about my new job and what we're doing. There are like three key things that I hope we talk about today. One is who we are, and New Mexico Safety Over Profit is the only advocacy organization in New Mexico working with actual victims and survivors of corporate greed. So patient safety, workers' rights, consumer protection. We're also working with victims and survivors of sexual assault, just generally people who've been harmed by systems and corporate greed. I really feel like we are, or I at least as a come on board as the executive director, I really want to make this organization the vehicle for those voices, for people who've been directly impacted to be able to share their story and to be able to advocate for what they believe will make New Mexico safer and stronger. And of course, like in this moment, that means our healthcare system. You know, our mission really is twofold, is to ensure safety for all New Mexicans, but also to ensure that people continue to have access to justice, which, as you both know, it is like a quintessential American right to have access to the justice system when you have been harmed, right?
Let me ask the hard question first. A lot of people would say, well, this organization's funded by trial lawyers, and we're looking at corporate greed. We're also looking at legalistic greed.
Sure.
How can we tell the difference? What would you say to somebody
I definitely want to talk about that. The other two things I really hope we talk about, though, is one, how the things like medical malpractice are part, for me, this is why I took this job, because they're also deeply intertwined with all social justice movements, right? If someone is harmed by systemic harm in one system, they're going to be harmed in another system. That's one of the things I hope we cover. And then, of course, solutions. What are actual solutions for patient safety? But yes, I would love to talk about our donors and this organization. Honestly, we are really proud of our donors. And they are trial lawyers. And honestly, one of the reasons I also was brought on is because I have experience being an executive director. One of my goals is to diversify our funding source, which is, you know, makes a healthy organization. But we have funders and donors who are lifelong New Mexicans who went to law school in New Mexico and who decided to stay in New Mexico to practice law and seek justice. Our donors are people who are deeply committed to systems change, and they're lawyers who have built relationships with their clients over years. People who have stood with families in the toughest moment of their life when their life was altered by medical malpractice. And some of these attorneys and some of these partners that we have as funders are deeply committed to systems change because they've seen the kind of harm that has been caused. And they're New Mexicans too. Like, they're also interacting with the healthcare system, and they also want to see a change. So this is not a thing. I think people want to sort of build this narrative that we're hiding something or that we're ashamed. It's actually quite the opposite. We're very proud of our donors, and we're very proud to partner with people who are also committed to systems change.
Yeah. So just as a follow-up on that, like, what would trial lawyers stand to gain from funding an organization like this?
I mean, you'd have to ask them, but what I will tell you is that this organization is a vehicle for so many of their clients, right? Like, their clients who they've experienced, who they have built these relationships with after a life-altering moment, right? We're talking about people being killed, their loved ones being killed, people being maimed, people being seriously and permanently injured. These are like the kinds of relationships attorneys have built, and they're watching these, you know, their clients sort of go through this harrowing process, often years in the legal system, and they have felt like they don't have a voice, and safety over profit has become that voice for those clients, right? Like, we are the voice for the people directly impacted so that they can speak. Once they've experienced this horrible thing, once they've gone through the traumatic experience of a court system, they still get to go to the legislator and say, this happened to me and I hope to make a difference for other mm-hmm. people. And so you'd have to ask trial attorneys why want to fund, but I really do believe that it's because they also want to see systems change.
Let me help you out a little here, because we wanted to get a trial attorney, and you know, I think we may have Joe Cervantes come on with us in December and talk about some of this. But what a lot of people do not understand about, and I didn't do much of this kind of practice. I was most of my career, a defense attorney, and I got paid an exorbitant sum per hour to play with all my legal toys and do whatever I could to make it hard for anybody to get money out of my client. I mean, I didn't do mostly that. But a lawyer who's doing this kind of work, plaintiff's contingency work, contingency means that you get, you know, if you sue the hospital or the doctor or the person who hits you with a truck, whatever it is, you get a certain amount, might be 15-20% initially, but if you actually go through serious litigating, it goes up. It could even be 40%. And in some remote cases where it's unlikely that you're going to prevail, might even be 50% of whatever they have to pay. So if I'm a lawyer and I, you know, would like to feed my kids, but I also really want to do good in the world. I don't like the abuses that rich people and governments do. So I am really receptive. People come in and they say, well, I got this problem. They did this to me. First of all, you got to assess how are they as a witness? Do they have a case? Were they really screwed? Assume they were really screwed. Now you have to get witnesses to show that in court. You have to get the documents of the other side. All of this being an extensive procedure in which there's some other folks in a big law firm whose sole job is to make life tough for you. And if you ask, well, what time of day was it that they went to the hospital, they object on six different grounds and make a hearing with the judge, and you're having to spend all this time just to find out a little information that they could have given you in a second. So you do that, and ultimately you get this massive 40%. But you don't get it if the jury doesn't like your guy, or if something goes wrong technically that you couldn't help. So it's really a gamble. You could spend much of your time for a year on a case and get nothing out of it.
Yeah, I mean, if
so
I can
gambling.
Address this a little yeah. bit, right? I think it's important for people love to talk about trial attorneys. People don't love to talk with trial attorneys. And I think that's kind of interesting, right? Mm-hmm. And I really do. I've also talked to doctors, right? I've been speaking with doctors for the last few years, given the situation in our own community with private equity-owned hospitals, right? And they're also talking about some of the issues with private equity. And the way that doctors talk about their patients is very much the same way attorneys mm-hmm. will talk about their clients, with care, with compassion, with like a deep desire to see right by families who've been harmed. Now, if we really want to talk about medical malpractice, I think one of the most offensive things that I see in the dialogue is that we talk about the lawsuits as if they didn't have real people behind them, as mm-hmm. if lawsuits didn't have real New Mexicans behind them who have been seriously impacted.
Right. Real harm. Right.
Real harm has been caused mm-hmm. to them. And when, you know, that happens to you and you go seek out an attorney, that attorney isn't going to say, oh, for sure, we have a case. It takes diligence to sort out, was it about outcome? Because we know those happen, right? Was it about outcome or was it medical malpractice? That takes time. That takes diligence. These kinds of cases, medical malpractice cases, are incredibly difficult to litigate. And in fact, in New Mexico, they are taking 3 times longer than the national average to settle, to come to a conclusion, right? The average case in New Mexico is like 5 to 7 years. That means 5 to 7 years of discovery, of research, of experts that families are having to be dragged through in order to find a little piece of justice. And I just feel like this conversation does not happen. You know when it does happen? When I hear like other advocacy groups who are like fighting for quote-unquote reform, they'll sort of offhandedly say, yeah, people deserve to be made whole. There is, I find that deeply offensive, that it's like a secondary sort of request and it doesn't honor and highlight the real experiences of people who've been directly impacted, and in fact kind of dehumanizes them often.
Let me, although I want to let Daisy ask you more questions, I want to take issue with you, or at least give you a counterexample.
Mm-hmm.
Those doctors are people too.
Yeah.
And I know one personally who got sued.
Mm-hmm.
Something bad happened to this doctor's patient. This doctor had done everything the doctor should do. I'm not going to say the type of field or the even with the doctor's gender or anything else, but the point is they have a, first of all, I believe the person, but secondly, they have a board of, I think it's six people vote on these cases.
Yeah.
Where trial lawyers and doctors and, you know, people from both sides look at the case and say, you know, is this a reasonable case?
Mm-hmm.
And in this particular situation, they unanimously said, no, it is not a reasonable case. But the lawyer pursued it. I can't say whether it's greedy lawyer or grieving or greedy family. You know, they may be very committed to it. But that doctor who cares about that doctor's work as much as I care about writing fiction or whatever and doing it right and cared about the patient who was a friend, is having the doctor's life being made miserable by this lawsuit. So how do we prevent that?
I don't think I'm going to answer that directly, Peter. I honestly, the majority of these cases are going up against hospitals, very insurance companies.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know who we're not talking about? Attorney's fees for is those folks.
Mm-hmm.
Those folks will get paid regardless,
yeah.
Right? Those attorneys for insurance companies and hospitals and private equity-owned hospitals, they have teams of 15, 20 attorneys. They'll get paid regardless. And I believe that we should really be careful about how we talk about certainly providers, but especially families, and that we don't use words like greedy when we refer to families who are grieving, who have lost a loved one, who have now are living with a permanent disability, who've been paralyzed, right? Like those are things that,
and
again,
I'm not talking about them, but some people
remember.
Are, you know, I'm not politically correct in my language.
No, that's okay. I just think we should talk about the majority of folks and not the one singular case, right? And I think
I agree.
But 100%. I'm happy to talk about singular cases too. I have a lot of stories about specific issues.
Yeah. So actually, I was hoping though that we can transition into your role and then how your organization plays into such examples, right? As Peter has just discussed.
Yes, absolutely. So, you know, I came into this organization with somewhat of a ready built-in base, if you will, right? Like there is, there are folks that I'm directly speaking with already who are have many different experiences in medical malpractice. There are families whose babies have been have died, who, because of complications that they've, sometimes you hear these stories and it just breaks my heart because they're New Mexicans. There are neighbors who are experiencing these kinds of tragedies. There are families who, there's a person who I just love her so much. She was paralyzed. She went in for a pretty common procedure. She was paralyzed and now has to interface with the patient compensation fund, and it's incredibly difficult for her to have to go ask them every time her wheelchair breaks, or like it's almost run like an insurance company, and it has created a lot of barriers for patients. And we can talk about that too. But anyway, really, like my role really has been to interface and bring on board folks who have experienced this tragedy, and through it all are saying, I don't want this to happen to anybody else. Please let me know what I can do, right? And we have folks who are saying, I want to share my story online. I want to write an op-ed. I want to talk to my legislators. I want to go to Santa Fe with you when these conversations are happening. That really is, like, at the core of it. I'm not here to be an expert on medical malpractice law. I'm here to be an expert on organizing and on people, and especially on people who have a deep desire to turn this really painful moment of their lives into something powerful and into advocacy for fellow New Mexicans.
Yeah. And what policies then is your organization?
Yes.
In terms
you.
Of medical malpractice, yeah. Can yes, we sort of dig
you.
In there?
Absolutely. Right. So I think before we do that, I do want to here's the problem as we see it, right? First, there is absolutely a healthcare crisis, right? Like, there is a healthcare crisis on many levels, and one of those levels is a national shortage of physicians, right? Like, this was well documented mm-hmm. long ago that there was going to be a shortage of physicians, one, because baby boomer generation physicians are retiring and leaving, but we also have an aging population that requires, respectfully, more healthcare and more care, right? Like, this was long documented. In New Mexico, what then adds to that shortage is quality of life issues. This has been well surveyed among doctors. UNM Health provided a mm-hmm. survey on this, and they said, here are some of the reasons doctors either don't want to come here or don't want to stay, is quality of life issues, right? Variety of different things, the education system, that we're, in fact, a rural state. People want to be close to their families.
Spouses can't get employed.
Yes, right. Like, there's all these quality of life issues that are happening in New Mexico as well. All of that is, like, frankly, perfect ground for exploitation by private equity-owned hospitals. New Mexico, if you didn't know this, has the highest proportion of private equity-owned hospitals in the country. We have, yeah, it is sad, and I believe the healthcare crisis has only been compounded by the corporatization of healthcare, right? I think I feel very concerned when some advocacy orgs don't, and even legislators don't acknowledge the real danger that private equity poses to healthcare and many other things, frankly, but to this conversation, healthcare. And then I think there's, like, the reality in New Mexico is that the majority of people who are uninsured and haven't had access to healthcare for a very long time are poor folks, are immigrants, are people of color, are people in rural communities, right? Like, those are the people also most likely to experience medical malpractice.
And
people of color, women of color, immigrants, the elderly, indigenous people are the people most likely to experience medical malpractice, right? So all of those are issues that we believe are serious and should be addressed, including the shortage, which isn't just physicians, by the way, right? Like, we have a shortage in dentists, in social workers, mm-hmm. in many different kinds of teachers, right? So I do think that's important to say before I get to solutions, because we do have those as well. But let me drink a water. Were you going to say something,
yeah.
Peter?
Oh, I was just going to throw in that Medicare in New Mexico is another contributor to the shortage, in the sense that Medicare doesn't pay as well as some other
entities. And the legislature has tried. Like, they've,
right.
To their credit, they have mm-hmm. tried as much as possible to be able to do this, including this recent session, right, that they're really looking at how to intervene with the issues with Medicaid.
So okay. What do you have in mind as solutions?
Yeah, so just big picture first is the mission for safety over profit is, like I said before, to ensure access to justice. We do want to hold corporations and individuals accountable for harm. We want to expose bad practices, especially the kinds of practices that are profit motivated. And we want to prevent harm and seek safer conditions. To us, that means upstream solutions like patient safety regulations, like staffing ratios, transparency and accountability for equity hospitals, merger transparencies, intentional recruitment of providers. Those are all the kinds of solutions that we really want to dive into. Whistleblower protection for healthcare providers. Instead, in the short term, we're focusing on preventing people losing access to justice, because that is the conversation that is currently being had. The reforms that people are talking about, at the heart of it, really are tort reform to ensure that people have less access to justice when harm is being done onto them.
Yeah, that was the question I was going to ask you, because we've had folks on previously to talk about caps on, I guess, well, I'm not even sure, like drawing a blank on the word here, but that's really where the issue is, and that the insurance that providers have to pay here mm-hmm. in the state is what's sending physicians away.
Yeah.
So what is the view of your organization on that?
Yeah. You know that survey that I was talking about, UNM mm-hmm. Health, on like why doctors are not coming here or leaving? I have a picture of it. I'm happy to show you from that presentation. But, you know, it talked about, these are all the reasons why.
We can't show the picture on the air.
I know. Sorry, everyone. I'm just going to describe it to you. It says, what do doctors value? This is UNM Health. 69% comfortable and enjoyable living environment. Family and friends living nearby. These are in order of how they've stated them. At the very bottom is malpractice. Mm-hmm. Culture, right? So there's a lot of things that matter. And at the very bottom of that list is malpractice climate. What I will say is that that I think it's important to remember that while this is part of the conversation, the best way to address malpractice lawsuits is to address malpractice. The actual, you know, negligence of medicine happening in our hospitals across the state. That is the best way to reduce lawsuits. And the fact is that a lot of advocates for reform are only talking about things in the courtroom. And don't get me wrong, right? Like we will always fight for access to justice for people, because when public policy has failed us, often the only remedy for justice that people have is in the courtroom, whether that's medical malpractice, whether that's police violence, whether that's pharmaceutical exploitation, right? Like the courtroom has been a place where people have been able to seek justice. And so we believe in that, but we don't believe that we fix malpractice or healthcare by reducing people's access to justice when harm has been caused onto them. And I'm happy to talk a little bit more about attorneys, caps, and those kinds of things, if you'd like.
I think it's worth saying that separate from, or maybe contributing to, this discussion we're having in New Mexico, where I agree with you, there are a lot of factors, the malpractice insurance not being number one among them, why we have a doctor shortage. It is a factor, and nobody should deny that. On the other hand, now, people are focusing just on that, either because it fits their ideology or because they really believe it, and trial lawyers are easy to attack. But
yeah,
tort reform, nice word, has a long right-wing history mm-hmm. of this is a way to prevent, you know, class actions, which mm-hmm. most people haven't dealt with that much, are also a factor. But contingency cases are how poor people get justice.
And this is, you know, tort reform, is it not? It is tort reform, right?
You know,
like what people are talking about, medical malpractice reform, is tort reform. And I think that we have to be clear about that, because when we talk about things like attorneys, caps, and all those, what you're actually saying is that you want to create two tiers of justice system, one for wealthy people who can afford attorneys, and one for poor folks who have strong cases, who want to seek justice and might not be able to afford.
Which is what we had historically.
Not because attorneys don't want to take those cases, but because I just said, sometimes they're taking 3-4 years, 5-7 years, and they're very expensive to litigate. And you know, people deserve to have access to justice. You know where there's also shortages in rural communities in New Mexico is legal deserts. Yes. Like there are also legal deserts in New Mexico where people don't have access to an attorney for their divorce, for, you know, getting custody of their children. Like these kinds of things also exist in New Mexico. I think, look, if there's any takeaway from this, I just want folks to step back a little bit and just think a little bit about why is it so easy to villainize trial attorneys when the real villains here, let's be honest, are insurance companies and multimillion dollar corporations who have taken over our hospitals, who frankly don't care about doctors, who don't care about patients and our safety.
And, you know, I think a factor a lot of people don't pick up on unless they talk to the doctors, those private equity companies contribute to the doctor shortage because there are doctors, and I'd sure be one of them if I were medical rather than a legal professional, who don't want to basically practice in a situation where people are saying, we got to save money, we got to use these tests that cost a lot of money more, whether we need them or not, and the hell with care.
The bottom line,
I'm exaggerating,
actually, their bottom line, private equity bottom line, is to make profit. Mm-hmm. And private equity hospitals are profitable, and they're profitable because they're cutting quality care, and they're burning out doctors, they're burning out our physicians, right? And I think that this is a really important conversation to have. In fact, Congress has had it already. Like Senator Heinrich actually has led an effort to bring oversight to private equity hospitals. Harvard, like reputable institutions like Harvard and Johns Hopkins, have done studies on private equity hospitals, and they have all consistently found that at a private equity hospital, you are 25%, there's 25% more of
absolutely
a chance for you to walk out with an injury than at any other institution. And the fact that in New Mexico, the majority, the, you know, we have the highest proportion of private equity hospitals, that to me is the real conversation and why we should be talking about why medical malpractice happens.
I agree, and I've written that in my column. Want to take a moment to reset and tell folks who may have just tuned in who we are. I'm Peter Goodman. My co-host is Daisy Maldonado here on Speak Up Las Cruces, and our guest is Johanna Bencomo. And I'm going to ask you a city-related question, relevant. I mean, a couple of them. But this one
on the spot
is relevant to what we're talking about. The city has, the city initially used to run Memorial.
Yes.
Sold it with a contract that requires those folks to report to the city and do certain things. And the city has formally told them, hey, you ain't doing it, after national news people were writing about it, but the city has said, step up, you know, come back. Where's that stand? Because we, you know, a lot of time keeps passing.
Yes.
Why?
I want to answer this in
I know you can't
know,
say what your attorney's telling you, but
I will tell you that, because this is public information, on Monday we had another joint closed session with the county and the city to discuss this matter. Just 2 months before that, we hadn't, like, it is moving forward and
slowly.
It is slow, and I much like everything at government, you know, moves at the pace of government. And do I wish that were different? I do. Do I understand why it's slow? I also do. And I want people to know that the pedal has not been stepped off of. I have asked, you know, our staff and our attorneys to figure out a way where we can talk about this publicly, because I think the public deserves it and it's important. But I do want people to know that this is more than ever, the county and the city are aligned, and this is a really big priority for us. But if I can step back to my daytime job at SOP, you know, the reason I took this job is for many reasons. And I know people have questions about this, but one of them was because I've learned so much about the harms of private equity on healthcare on our community, right? Like, LifePoint is one of the most, if not the most, MMC LifePoint is one of the most profitable hospitals they own, right? And
yes,
how do we make sense of that when our communities are saying, I'm not receiving care, I'm not receiving quality care? So one of the reasons, when I was approached about this job, I was like, no, thank you. I don't know anything about medical malpractice. That's no thanks. I'm not interested in being executive director ever again. Like, you know, no thanks. But then I started paying attention to the conversation, to the op-eds. I went to a couple meetings. And every time I went to those or I was paying attention, never did people talk about the people who've experienced medical malpractice. I am telling you, pay attention. It is rare that advocates who want reform talk about the people who've experienced medical malpractice, aside from a quick note that says, and they should be made whole. And so I went back to these folks and I said, you know what? I think I do. I think I do. And here's why. My entire life, I've done work around immigrant rights justice, around workers' rights justice, border rights justice. Like, that has been my whole career. It's the reason I also decided to run for office. These are the exact same communities that face the most harm in medical systems. These are the communities that are facing medical racism. These are the communities that are most likely to be harmed by medical malpractice. Often these are the communities that don't even know they could pursue justice, right? My entire career, I have walked side by side with trial attorneys, quite frankly, right? Trial attorneys are supporting immigrant movements. Trial attorneys have supported workers in fighting for worker justice and workers' comps. Trial attorneys have fought for us to get opioid settlement money after pharmaceuticals, you know, harmed our community so badly. You don't have to like them. You don't have to like them. I'm not here to defend them. What I am here to say is, please consider why it has been so easy to villainize people who have historically walked alongside people fighting for justice, and that we turn the I want to work so badly on solutions that address our healthcare crisis, from Medicaid to the shortage to private equity. And I know people are like, oh, without private equity, some hospitals couldn't survive. I'm not saying every hospital needs to be state-run. What I am saying is that there needs to be guardrails. Oregon's the only state that has done this, but they have established guardrails to ensure that private equity doesn't own the majority of hospitals, and so that they're not making the majority of decisions for how those hospitals should be run. I'm just saying those are the conversations we need to be having.
Thoroughly agree. As we run out of time, I got to ask one other, or we have to ask another question you may feel is irrelevant, and it is to your day job.
If it's city, bring me back for another 30
minutes. But we had a caller. We had a caller who was very concerned about something called the nuisance abatement of Las Cruces.
They're concerned about it?
Yeah, they did.
I don't know. I'm very excited about it, so.
Well, they said.
Let me show my laptop officially.
They said Johanna Bencomo was trying to use it to steal properties from people for low-income housing. But basically, what is that group? This person was saying they overstepped their bounds in trying to get property.
First of all, I just have to say, I'm doing this job for 2 more years, and I'm not running again for anything else, in large part because of stuff like this. You can never get around you're trying to do something nefarious when you're trying to do something good, you know? And even with this job, by the way, thank you for correcting someone on how to say my name and just pushing back that I wasn't here to defend myself. Please tell Walt thank you for that as well. I don't know why people all of a sudden care how much I make. I've had another job the entire 6 years I've been on the city council, and no one has cared about that before. That's aside. This, I am telling you, the thing that constituents call me about the most is a couple things. When are you going to pave my road? And there's a house in my neighborhood that has been abandoned for years. What are you doing about it? And in District 4, we have the majority of abandoned properties. If you drive around MacArthur Elementary School, okay, which, by the way, MacArthur Elementary School, those kids love to walk to school. They have a huge community that loves to walk to
the walking school bus.
Yes. From Valley to 2nd Street, from Picacho to Hadley, this block, there are 18 abandoned properties.
Oh, wow.
We have a housing crisis in Las Cruces.
Mm-hmm.
If you own property, there is a, like, written, there is, like, an unspoken responsibility that you have to your property, to your neighborhood. What happens when you abandon that property? I'm not even saying, literally, we don't have the ability or authority to turn anybody's property into affordable housing. What we're trying to do is say, take some responsibility for the property you have abandoned. That is what the nuisance abatement is for.
Okay.
I think we might have a caller on about that or no?
For our 4 minutes that we have left, or 3 minutes, because we need to start with... We do have a caller, having said that.
Oh, okay.
So...
Quickly.
Good morning.
Good morning. I am calling because I am very alarmed at the doctor shortage. New Mexico is the only state that is losing doctors, and part of it was because of the medical malpractice insurance. Now, this organization that your guest is heading is the Trial Lawyers Association, and they were sued by the Ethics Commission because they failed, they did not want to reveal their donors. And when they got their donors, it was 80.
Let me cut into that. Let me short circuit that, because I know what you're talking about, and I want to speed things up because we only have about 2 more minutes with this guest. So, Joanna, the question is, the trial lawyers basically got sued by the Ethics Commission successfully for trying to hide their donors and hide the fact that it was primarily, if not wholly, trial lawyers supporting the group, including one big donor from Indiana or somewhere.
No, that's actually incorrect. So there was the Ethics Commission issue, which happened before I came on.
I know it was before you came on.
But I will say that what we find interesting is that the Ethics Commission is holding our C4 too much. There are many C4s in the state, and New Mexico mm-hmm. Safety Over Profit just happens to be held to a different standard than everyone else. Here's what I'll say. The Ethics Commission did not force SOP to... talk about their donors. SOP decided to do that as part of that whole conversation. Again, we are actually very proud of the donors.
But the caller's right that those donors were not being revealed until the Ethics Commission stepped in and said, you're breaking the law here. And it sounds to me like the group then did it to avoid getting told.
No, I wouldn't say to avoid getting told. It was, to be honest with you, there's some disagreement with the way the Ethics Commission interpreted that law. And yeah, New Mexico SOP and the staff decided that it was best to just talk about our donors. Again, there is no intent to hide anything. As I've said previously, we are proud of our donors.
Caller, did you have a further question?
Well, I just want to know, as the mayor pro tem, and taking on this SOP organization of trial lawyers, is that not a betrayal of her
position? Is there a conflict of interest?
As mayor pro tem.
Okay, thank you, caller, and listen in as she answers that question.
I mean, I think it's really important that some of these talking points are repeated. They're really disingenuous and are intended to misinform.
We have very little time because we've got other people coming on.
Sure.
Is it a conflict of interest? If not, why not?
I mean, shortly, no, right? But like I have served with business owners, with realtors, with insurance brokers. There's currently people on staff with spouses on the city council. There's people who've worked for NMSU. All of them, you could argue, potentially have conflict of interest. But here's the thing. At the beginning of every meeting, the mayor says, is there a conflict of interest with any item on the agenda? If there ever is, I will recuse myself, as I have the last 6 years. Yep. I have had a job in another field the entire 6 years I've been on the council.
Let me add, she's basically right as far as it being a basic conflict of interest. If there were an issue that involved trial lawyers or involved this, doctor shortage and malpractice and this kind of issue, which more likely be decided state level, then she would have to recuse herself.
Correct.
And if she didn't, that would be improper. Anyway, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
We got to take
a
very quick break. We'll have you again soon. We'll be back in a moment talking about dyslexia.